The government is the beast. The Constitution is the whip and chair. The people are supposed to be the lion tamers. They have been remiss in their duty. Okay, what has been done over the years is the people, we the people, have been invited to voluntarily waive their rights in favor of corporate benefits. And by doing so, people have become subject to the government corporation.
Take his mask and shove it. I ain't wearing it no more. Y'all look at me like I'm from Mars when I don't wear it in the store.
I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. Where we go one, we go all.
We have an army of digital soldiers. We have what we call citizen journalists. And so the American people decided to take over the idea of information, and they did it through social media. You are demonstrating a level of intellectual courage that our country desperately needs.
Today's Democrat Party is held hostage by haters. Absolute haters. Left-wing haters. Angry mobs. Deep state radicals and their fake news allies.
It's time to expand your thinking. You will need to reset everything you thought you knew about the world, about the people you trust, about history, about yourself.
We look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth. It was because here in this land, we unleash the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before.
Fellow Americans and citizens of the world, now it is our turn to shine. Wherever we are, we will become the plan when we choose to reject what they call globalism. We recognize the words they use to bend us to their will, and we say no more. It's time to turn off the media, follow your instincts, trust yourself, and be the plan. May God bless America and the world.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
May God bless America.
Hey friends, Sean from SGT Report here. Have you ever seen a bigger shit show than what's been going on at this Democratic convention in Milwaukee? What a total disaster. You know what that's called, friends? It's called karma. These people are such lost souls. They're traitors and they're truly demonic, and they get what they deserve. These people are unelectable, and even amongst themselves, they can't get behind Joe Biden.
I hereby second the nomination of Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont for President of the United States of America.
What a complete and utter joke. And the mainstream media wants us to believe that sleepy, creepy Joe Biden is leading in the polls. Give me a break. Okay, friends, before we begin this two-part interview with Brent Johnson, this is some must-know information, and we really go deep into the weeds about your straw man, your fictional person, your corporate person. So much to talk about here. I think you're going to really enjoy the conversation. It's given the tyranny and the multi-pronged attacks against humanity happening globally, this interview could not be more timely. I think it's going to mean a lot to you. There's actionable, important information packed into this one. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered, wrote Thomas Paine in his piece titled The Crisis. Yet we have this consolation with us that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to bind us in all cases whatsoever. And if we, being bound in that matter, is not slavery, then is there not such a thing as slavery upon earth? Even the expression is impious, for so unlimited a power can belong only to God. Friends, I have on the line right now Brent Johnson. He's the author of The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation, and the spiritual book, The Quiet Voice of God, and his new book, The Pursuit of Happiness, Freedom, and the Human Spirit. He's got a great website, freedomradio.us, where you can also listen to the Voice of Freedom podcasts and webcasts. For more than 28 years, Brent has had great success in teaching those who want to know practical, genuinely workable methods on how to truly live free from the endless encroachment of Big Brother. That makes Brent a true modern-day freedom fighter. Brent Johnson, welcome.
Thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I love that you opened up with Thomas Paine, one of my favorites, if not my favorite founding father.
Yeah, me too. And I got to be honest with you. I've been quoting Thomas Paine lately because these are the times that try men's souls. Did you see what's going on in New Zealand? If you test positive for COVID, they're going to take you away and force you to go to a quarantine camp. It's absolute madness, and it's happening globally, Brent.
And not only that, just since you brought up New Zealand, I lived in New Zealand for 2.5 years. I was working on a movie down there. Mm-hmm. And in New Zealand, I did a little bit of studying about the law. They have a Bill of Rights, but their Bill of Rights, and this is true in most countries that have Bills of Rights, their Bill of Rights is subject to the will of Parliament. In other words, the American Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution, which is a limitation on government. But the New Zealand Bill of Rights, okay, is subject to Parliament. So it doesn't actually limit government in any way. New Zealand is what they call a constitutional monarchy. Underline the word monarchy there.
Well, I think that's interesting. I've made the point time and time again that when Justin Trudeau was sworn in as Prime Minister of Canada, he swore his allegiance to the Queen and her Privy Council. So, yeah, what is really going on in Canada, in Australia, in New Zealand? Feel free to weigh in on that. Justin Trudeau, the same thing happened with the Prime Minister of Australia when he was sworn in.
Well, and they all have the same type of system, a constitutional monarchy. In the case of Canada, it's a little bit different, but when I was in New Zealand, it was at the time that they were working on creating Auckland as a super city, and they did a referendum vote among the population, and 96% of the people, amazing figure, voted against it. Nonetheless, what they did when they created the super city was they took 60 duly elected ministers, representatives of the people, and they removed them from power and inserted 19 appointed ministers appointed by the parliament to oversee and govern this new so-called super city. New Zealand is definitely a problem child when it comes to their foundation of law and how they look at rights. You know, it all comes, I mean, you talked about Thomas Paine and the crisis. That crisis was written at a time when a real human being was right there in the middle of a genuine war for independence and for liberty against who else? The Brits, okay? And the entire British system, which was shared by almost every country in the 18th century, the British system was a two-class system, the nobility and the commoner. And if you were a commoner, you couldn't own property, you couldn't participate in making law, and the best you could ever hope for in life would be to be a servant to a member of the nobility. You couldn't get any better. And when the Declaration of Independence came out, and it said that all men and women, with all due respect, all men are created equal, that's what it was addressing. It was not addressing that you have equal rights, that you, in terms of equal pay or equal health care or any of that. It was that previously all were not considered equal. And the British paradigm was that the nobles are the nobles and the commoners are the commoners. And the American paradigm was that, no, everybody has rights from God, the same rights from God, whether you're black, you're white, you're yellow, you're green, you're a man, you're a woman, you're old, you're young, you're employed, you're not employed. It makes no difference. So when you look at New Zealand or Canada or Australia, okay, you are looking at a system that is still steeped in that two-class paradigm of nobility and commoners. And that's how most of us are looked at by government in the US as well. Okay, we're looked at as commoners. We're just the people. We're not supposed to know the truth. We're not supposed to have access to information to make our lives better. We're just supposed to do what we're told.
Well, that's right. And things are really moving quickly back toward tyranny. The needle is moving back towards tyranny across the globe, and even in our own country, especially in states run by Democrats. So let's go back to The Crisis by Thomas Paine. All right. I don't know if you can see this, but I just want to go back.
Yes, I see it.
Let me read this again. Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to bind us in all cases whatsoever. All right. Now, let's go back. This is Brent Johnson in 2011, friends, and as you listen to the words he spoke, could you even have imagined what's going on in our country right now? Listen to this.
You know, it's pretty amazing. If you go over into some stranger's house and go knock on the door and say, okay, I'm imposing all kinds of rules on the people in this house right now, and if you break those rules, you're going to have to pay me money. They'd absolutely be beside themselves, call the sheriff and have you arrested. But if you sidestepped and went to a costume shop and got yourself a nice blue uniform and cap and little tin badge and then walked and said, all right, you know, you folks are going to have to behave differently or you're going to have to give me money, they would go, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir.
Brent, that's exactly what's going on right now across the country based on COVID.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you know, it is so insidious. I mean, it's like an onion where you peel off levels and there are more beneath and more, and you open it up and more and more. It is so insidious. You could go on forever about how this is being done. This is basic Joseph Goebbels propaganda. Joseph Goebbels, the information minister for Adolf Hitler, was absolutely brilliant. Evil, but brilliant. And he understood that if you tell the commoners, if you tell the people anything at all in the right way, the majority of them will buy it, will go for it. And from his perspective and what's going on today, it didn't matter that the minority didn't buy it. What mattered was the majority, because the majority would go out there and would support whatever it is that they were being told. If you're being told the sky is falling, I'll tell you something here. This is actually interesting. Many years ago, I had occasion to read a Daily Mirror, which was an old New York newspaper from the 40s. This was a Daily Mirror dated early August 1945. Now, it was known that the Germans would lose the war at this point. This was after D-Day in Normandy, and there was no question the Germans were going to lose the war, and it was just before Victory Day. And so Hitler knew he was toast. In this newspaper, and the front page and the back page both were about the Yankees. The front page was the Allies, the back page was the baseball team. And on page 3, the first inside right-hand page, left column, which is known to be the most read section of a newspaper, was a story, of course, about the war. And midway down that column was a quote by Adolf Hitler. Now, I tried to put I'm an actor from way back, and I tried to put myself in the mind of a German soldier as I read this. Now, I do not remember what it said, but I do remember that it was inspiring. It was like, victory is around the corner. And it didn't matter that it was all collapsing. Victory is around the corner. You tell them what you want them to hear, no matter what the scenario is. And 80% of them will believe it. I even wrote an article called The 80% Factor about that. So, okay, if Donald Trump came up and said that, you know, scientists have told us that the sky really is falling, and he told it in the right venue, which in this case would probably be CNN, 80% of the people tomorrow will be telling everybody that the sky is falling, and this is the way it is, and if you don't believe me, you're wrong. And that's what we have with the corona crap, okay, which is that it's not just the way that it's being misrepresented in order to control people. It's that most people are out there defending it. Ordinary people are sitting there saying, "Yeah, you know, there's this woman in, what is it, Oklahoma? I don't remember what state, but a representative who actually is trying to introduce a bill that would charge anybody who refuses to wear a mask with attempted murder."
Right.
And you've got people in the public defending that. You got people shouting down other people saying, you're not wearing a mask. You know, you're a murderer. You hate people. You're hate. That's what you are. And they are defending their own servitude. Dresden James, famous statesman from the 19th or 20th century, once said or once wrote that they rattle their chains to boast of their freedom. Yeah. And that's what we have going on here. That's exactly what we have going on here. And those of us who can see, those of us who look through the propaganda and are able to tell what's really going on, we're always going to be in the minority. And there is always, and this is the Goebbels thing, there is always about 80% of the people who will go along with any story told if it's told in the right way.
Well, I think you're right, and I want to read a quote here that I love from Charles McKay. I've used the quote many times, but first I want to let people know we are going to talk about corporate personhood in this interview, guys. We're going to talk about all of that stuff, so stay tuned. But given the propaganda that we're being bathed in, Brent, you probably know under Obama, they disabled or dismantled the Smith-Mundt Act, so now the government itself can propagandize domestically to the American people. They can use the media to lie to us. And I love this quote from Charles McKay as it pertains to COVID. Men, it has been well said, think in herds. It will be seen that they go mad in herds while they only recover their senses slowly and one by one. I do firmly believe, Brent, that this great awakening is real. And I think that the powers that be, the powers that ought not be in this nation are really on their heels because their fascist tyranny has never been more obvious. I mean, look what's happening with the doctors speaking out about hydroxy C and zinc. They're being banned. They're being criticized. They're being targeted. Their reputations are being trashed. The media is turned against them. The videos are being deleted from YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Google. And they change their algorithms to filter out what they call misinformation. I've never seen this quote-unquote shadow government, this deep state apparatus, which is corporate-owned. It's wholly corporate, the whole thing. You know, the slogan at sgtreport.com is the antidote to corporate propaganda, because we've seen these lies for many years. And now I think people are waking up. The herd is waking up, slowly, one by one. But I really think people are waking up. What do you think about this great awakening? Are you seeing it?
Definitely. And I got a couple of things to say. First, I want to address propaganda briefly. Okay. I do a segment on my show called Propaganda 101 and it just teaches people how to see through propaganda. And I'll give you two simple examples of propaganda that you may not even have ever thought of. Okay. If you read a story, a news story, any story that mentions any government that is either the U.S. or allied with the U.S. always talks about the government as an administration. Any story that addresses a government that is not allied with the U.S. or is a direct enemy of the U.S. talks about the government as a regime. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi in Libya.
And Assad and all of it. It's always, and when you think of the words administration, you think something proper. And when you think of the word regime, you think something evil. You know, I'll give you a second example. Okay, how many times have you ever seen a television commercial for the military? Be all that you can be. Mm-hmm. Okay, the true, the proud, the Marines, all that. And at the very end of the commercial, in little letters, it always says, paid for by the U.S. Army or by whom, you know, whoever. It's always paid for by the government, which means it's paid for by the taxpayers. Now, understand, if you become a member of the military, you sign on to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you become literally a subject to the government. So, taxpayer dollars are being used to promote waiver of your rights in favor of becoming subject to government. Talk about propaganda.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I have a son who was considering signing up for the military, and I encouraged him to really think long and hard about that because I'm a supporter of veterans. But what I wanted to explain to my son, because he's anti-vaccine, is I said, once you sign on that dotted line, they will inject you with whatever the hell they want, and you can't say no or you're going to get court-martialed. So that really woke him up. That's really the primary reason he switched directions, and now he's going to college instead.
And those are two very simple examples of propaganda that 98% of the people will never even notice. The moment you mention it, you go, oh, wow, yeah, that's true. You know, I never thought of that. That's what propaganda does, by the way. It's like hypnosis. If you clearly don't want to be hypnotized, you won't be. But most people, because they aren't thinking clearly, okay, are subject to the suggestion, okay, or the hypnosis or the propaganda. And, you know, that's how it works. What was the other thing? You just asked me. I said I wanted to mention propaganda, and then there was something else.
Well, I definitely want to get to corporate personhood, because here's the thing. This is what I want to ask you. When you see certain Democrat governors and mayors, and sure, there's probably been a few Republicans. I don't really love what's going on in Florida right now because COVID. But when you see certain tyrants like Lori Lightfoot in Chicago or Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, Cuomo in New York, and de Blasio in New York City, or of course, Gavin Newsom out in California, when you see these tyrants declare mandates of mask wearing, or even sign executive orders that you know and I know are unconstitutional, what do we the people have left as our power to say no? How do we circumvent that kind of tyranny? Because it's really just the writ of paper. It's the writ of man. It's the law of man. It's completely unconstitutional, and it makes my blood boil. What do you do if you're living in one of those cities or states?
Oh, I actually have a very good answer for you to that. Just before I get to that, just the corporate personhood, by the way, you should understand that particularly in the U.S., but it's also true in most countries, every state has been incorporated since the early 60s. All 50 states are corporations, and you have two coexisting states in each state. You have something called the capital S State of California, which is a corporation, and because it's a corporation, it is subject to federal law. It is subject, it is underneath the federal government, okay? Then you have California. California is a state under the Articles of Confederation. It is above the federal government in the pecking order. It is its own sovereign country. It actually is referred to in the U.S. codes. Each of the states is referred to as a foreign country, with its own borders, its own laws, its own government, the whole thing. Okay, so all of those regulations you talk about, all of those so-called unconstitutional regulations come from the corporate state. But the corporation is not subject to the Constitution. It is subject to the corporate federal government. We can get into that more if you like. Yeah, that's what I mean by it's so insidious. Not one in a million will truly understand what's going on and how it has come about. This, by the way, is also why if you go into court and you cite the Constitution, the judge will actually say in court, the Constitution doesn't apply in these matters because it doesn't. You're dealing with corporate law. It's not what the Constitution created. Constitution created the actual government. The government created the corporations. Okay. It's a whole different world. The way you deal with mandates is a very simple way, and it's very effective, and it's already proven very effective. Every day, I'm getting calls from people who have used what I'm about to tell you successfully. Okay, you use what's called a notice of liability. I have notices of liability written on face masks. By the way, I can email them to anybody or snail mail them to anybody. You can even go up to my website and actually download it yourself. I have them written right now for face masks and for vaccines. Here's the way it works. No law can require you to do something that will harm you. No law can do that. Okay? So here's what happens. You got a grocery store that says that you have to have face masks. Okay? You carry one of these face masks exemption notices of liability. What the notice says is it says that I have reason to believe that wearing a face mask may cause me harm. Now, I'm willing to comply, and this is the key. I'm willing to comply with your mandate. You're not fighting them. You're not telling them that you're not going to comply. I'm willing to comply with your mandate. However, because I have these concerns, I need you to accept personal liability for any harm that comes to me as a result of wearing the face mask. And that's in the document itself, a place for somebody to sign accepting personal liability. Let me tell you what has happened when these are used. And these have been used in medical offices. These have been used in grocery stores. And every day, like I say, I'm getting reports of success using these. Okay, what happens is somebody looks at that and says, well, I'm going to have to go get my manager. Get the manager down there. Manager looks at it and says, well, I'll be right back, and goes upstairs and comes back down. This just happened a couple days ago. Okay, comes back down and says, well, you can come into the store, but I'm going to have to walk with you in case somebody asks why you're not wearing a mask. But fine, no problem. Now, what happens if they say no? What happens if they actually say, well, I don't care, I'm not signing that, and you can't come in here? Now you have legitimate legal grounds to go after them. And in this particular case, you will win. You will actually win because this jives with corporate law.
Okay? Now, what legal grounds would you have? Is it discrimination?
It's exactly what it is. It's discrimination. And, okay, on top of that, you can add public embarrassment and attack on reputation, which is an actionable matter. Because what's happened is, you know, if they've told you in a public venue, okay, that, you know, you can't come in here, that's public embarrassment and attack on your reputation. Okay, that's exactly what it is. But it is discrimination. That is exactly what it is. And when you go in there, you go into court and you say, I was more than willing to comply. I never said I wouldn't comply. That's the key to your argument. I'm willing to comply. However, I have legitimate concerns that this might harm me. And like I said, no law and no judge will ever try to acknowledge that there is a law that requires you to harm you. It will never happen.
That's so fascinating. Have you talked to my friend Crow 777? Do you know who that is?
No, I don't.
Oh, you got to talk to Crow. I think he'll probably listen to this. I'll hook you guys up. He's got a great show. You guys need to talk. He actually said the exact same thing to me when we were talking about the Bill Gates vaccine and the potential for it being made mandatory. And he said, well, here's how you answer that. You tell them, I would be happy to take your vaccine if you can prove to me that it's safe and effective and has not harmed anyone. And you need to sign a notice of liability in case I get injured from taking your vaccine.
And that's it. That's exact. And it will work because nobody's going to sign it. Nobody's going to sign it. But the fact that they don't sign it, and this is in my vaccine notice, and there are others out there, in my vaccine notice, I actually say, if you refuse to sign, you are acknowledging that you do not know for sure that this is safe. And so if you have to go into court on this, and by the way, if they fine you, if they say, well, the police comes up, says you don't have a mask, you're going to get a fine for $250. Fine, you go into court with your notice of liability. Same thing, you're going to win on this one. You really are, because you're willing to comply. You're not fighting them. All you're saying is, I just need somebody to take responsibility if I'm going to be harmed.
That's right.
And they were unwilling to do that. That argument is an unbreakable argument. Let me tell you, these notices of liability, something similar to these, have been used very successfully with smart meters. You know, there are a lot of places where they've come in and they've said, we're mandating smart meters. And there are people who say, well, you know, the radiation from smart meters actually makes me sick. So we don't care. We're going to do it anyway. Fine. They come up with a notice of liability. Guess what? You don't have to have a smart meter.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. And there are very practical answers for the tyranny that plagues us, friends. But you have to take action. You have to become educated. And that's what this conversation is about. For me, too. I don't have all the answers. I don't know all this stuff. But I do know about corporate personhood. So I want to get into a couple of different areas here. But before we do, Brent, can you explain corporate personhood, explain the courts, explain your name in all caps, and help us understand what that means as briefly as you can, and how these courts operate with your, I guess, fictional person, your corporate personhood, your name in all caps?
Yes, I can. And if you'll bear with me, because I just remember what I forgot a few moments ago, and it's a very important point. You were talking about the growing tyranny. And how, you know, the scale seemed to have shifted and all that. And I wanted to address that very briefly, if I may. I was brilliant in school in math. I'm a math person. And I put everything in my mind into formulas because math is an exact science. Okay, it really and truly is. Now, this is a mathematical formula for you, but I'm going to put it into words. Okay, so you can understand it. There is not a government on the planet that knows when to stop. Tell me if there is any government that will ever come out and say, we have enough taxes and we have enough regulations, we can stop now.
I don't know that there is one. I think you're 100% right. But I will say Sweden didn't lock anybody down. They didn't require mask wearing. And they've already, you know, they've already conquered this stupid COVID thing.
Absolutely.
That's at least one government that isn't totally tyrannical.
No. And there are degrees, okay, in every government. But no government will ever say, we have enough taxes and regulations, we will stop completely.
You're 100% right. I interviewed G. Edward Griffin a few years back. We were talking about the devaluation of our dollar, and we were talking about getting off a gold standard. And I made the argument to G. Edward Griffin. I said, well, we wouldn't necessarily need a gold standard if we had an honorable government. And he laughed and he said, there's no such thing as an honorable government. That's the problem.
That's true. Okay. And that's why this Constitution is supposed to limit government. The government is the beast. The Constitution is the whip and chair. The people are supposed to be the lion tamers. They have been remiss in their duty. But here's my point. Because government never knows when to stop, it will always squeeze tighter and tighter and push more and more, always. Absolute mathematical certainty. Every human being has what I call a tolerance line in the sand. I'm willing to take so much, I'm not willing to take no more. Okay, now it's different for everybody. Your tolerance line is different than mine. Mine is different than the next person. Okay, and that's the way it should be. Everybody is an individual. Everyone has that line in the sand. Because government does not know to stop. If it was smart, it would. But because government is not smart, it doesn't know to stop. It will always push people further and further and more and more and more until more and more people have their tolerance line in the sand crossed. And when that happens, those people push back. Absolutely. Doesn't matter where your line in the sand is, when it's crossed, you do push back. So inevitably, since government will squeeze tighter and more people will have their tolerance line in the sand crossed and will push back until enough people push back that you have a revolution. That's inevitable. It must happen. That is what you're talking about when you say more and more people are waking up to the tyranny. Okay, it's inevitable. It has to happen. And it is happening. And it will continue to happen until enough people push back. And then we start all over again. And hopefully, it will be more organized than chaotic when it happens. But it's going to happen. There will be a revolution.
Well, we need one. And certain states need a revolution more than others. Look at South Dakota, for instance. You've got a governor who respects and puts the Constitution and the Bill of Rights first. And in California, you have tyrants that only know how to raise taxes and lock people down and say, you can't go and open your business today. And if you do, we're going to fine you $500, $10,000. We're going to put you in jail. I cannot believe how far gone some of these states and cities are under Democrat rule. So I don't want to get too off track here, but I just want to make the point that it is a slippery slope into absolute despotism. And some of these tyrant Democrats seem hell-bent on taking people there into absolute despotism. All right, I want to ask you about corporate. You can comment on that, but I do really want to get to corporate personhood.
Because yes,
it's important regarding our taxes, regarding
it is.
All of that stuff. Because I got to tell you, I'm sick and tired of paying taxes to a government who issues checks to people who don't work and prints money out of thin air. Why in the world am I paying income tax at all?
Let me do that. Let me make a quick comment, though, on Democrat, Republican. Okay, I'm very non-political, believe it or not. I talk about politics all the time. But whenever I edit stories to post in my website, I always take out the party affiliation with a senator or a congressman. I put their state, but not their party. This is why. While it's true that Democrats are crazy, okay, I agree, in general, okay, that's not how you're supposed to judge people. You don't judge them on their party. You judge them on their actions. If a Democrat does something good, I'll be the first one to come out and say, this guy did something good. And if a Republican does something bad, I'll be the first guy to call him on it. Okay, we need to stop looking at party affiliations. It's not the party. It's the individual's actions.
Oh, I don't disagree at all. I really don't. And I think to a large degree, both parties are controlled by puppet masters above. I totally get it. But as it pertains to the Democratic Party today versus when John F. Kennedy was president, it's been weaponized, and I've never, ever seen a more explicit group of tyrants that seem to really hate this country, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. I mean, these people, look, if Joe Biden becomes president, do you think that they're not going to open the borders, make mask wearing mandatory, and then when that vaccine is ready, make that mandatory too? I've said time and time again lately, Brent, I think these people are in the grip of the Antichrist. There's an Antichrist spirit surrounding Antifa in a large portion of the Black Lives Matter movement, BLM, established, mm-hmm. Founded by two Marxists.
Mm-hmm. So and funded by George Soros.
Yeah. So I'm with you, but this is spiritual warfare, man. I've never, mm-hmm. in my time on this planet, I've never seen things so explicitly black and white, right and wrong, up is down, yep. left is right. And left, yep. in this case, is not right. Left is wrong. These people are demonic. A lot of these people are truly in the grip of the Antichrist.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. All right, let's talk about corporations and corporate person. And corporate is an important word here because you have to understand all corporations get their existence from corporate federal statutory law. So all corporations are subject to the government. Now, when the U.S. was created, if you have a flow chart, you would see God is on top. God created we the people. We the people created the Constitution. The Constitution created the government. The government created all the administrative agencies and all of that stuff. Okay, that's the pecking order. Okay, however, what has happened over the years, and it's been done through very insidious, fraudulent methods. Okay, what has been done over the years is the people, we the people, have been invited to voluntarily waive their rights in favor of corporate benefits. And by doing so, people have become subject on the flowchart to the government corporation. That is, you talk about taxes. Let me tell you something. I have not paid a penny to the Internal Revenue Service in 30 years, and they leave me alone. They don't bother me. They don't send me notices. They even raided me once when I was a new kid on the block in broadcasting. And it's a funny thing, they didn't take any of my IRS notes, but they did take all of my Federal Reserve notes. Not money, but I mean, you know, research notes and things like that. And they stole two pieces of collector's gold from me. 10 years later, they gave them back. And by the way, the guy who headed up the raid ended up getting fired after I did what I did. That's a completely separate story here. So what happens is this, that you have certain rights that you were endowed with by your creator. How many, show of hands, folks, how many of you were created by government? Then you didn't get your rights from the government, okay? However, among those rights, think of rights as a tool. You can lose your arm, you can lose your leg, you cannot lose your rights. I don't cotton to people telling me they're taking my rights. Nobody's taking your rights. They can't take your rights. Your rights are more a part of you than your arms and legs. But your rights are a tool. And like any tool, you can make an agreement not to use them. I can enter a contract with you that says, I own this hammer, but I'm not going to use it. And I'm bound by that contract if I entered into it voluntarily and knowing what I was doing. And that's what most people have done, though they haven't known what they are doing. Okay, they have entered contracts to take the tool that is their rights and put it on the shelf. I agree not to use my rights voluntarily in order to become eligible for all of the corporate benefits. You'll notice all the corporate benefits, Social Security, welfare, food stamps, unemployment insurance, workman's comp, small business loans, et cetera, all of that. None of that is authorized by the Constitution. That's how you know it comes from the corporate government, because the organic government can't do that. It can't take from one group of people and give to another. It can't do that. Only the corporation can, because it is not subject to the Constitution. So what happens is they come out and they say to you, well, we're going to give you all kinds of benefits. What they don't tell you is that when you become eligible for the benefits, even if you haven't applied for the benefits themselves, it's your eligibility. When you become eligible for those benefits, you have agreed to waive your rights in favor of the privilege of being a federal corporate U.S. citizen. And it is that has caused all of the taxation, every bit of it. Let me tell you briefly how the income tax came to be.
I just talked about this recently with a couple of friends of mine, and it is interesting. So give us the cliff notes, because then I want to circle back, and I want to ask you about property taxes and income taxes.
Absolutely. Well, briefly on income taxes. In 1943, something called the Victory Tax was passed. It was a 5% tax on everybody's earnings. It was supposed to be apportioned, but that's not apportionment. That was, if you earn more, you paid more. So it wasn't properly constitutionally done. But nonetheless, everybody agreed to it. Nobody had any problems. 5 cents out of every dollar goes to the war effort. Let's kick Hitler's ass. Okay, no complaints. In May of 1944, the Victory Tax was repealed, but the repeal was never announced in the media. It was never told to the general public. The quiet repeal of the tax is in the Congressional Record. You can check it out yourself. At the same time, the corporate federal government instructed its corporations, which are subject to it, to give to all their workers a form. This form was W-4 form. If you read a W-4 form, you'll see it's called a request for withholding allowance. Note the term request. It is a voluntary gesture on the employee's part. And they brought these papers up to people and they said, here, I need you to sign this so you can be paid. Of course, everybody signed it. Nobody thought about it. And the rate at the time was 5%, which everybody was used to having taken out of their pay, so nobody thought twice about it. But now, instead of the money going to the war effort, the money was going to the privately held Internal Revenue Service, whose grandfather corporation is the, wait for it, Federal Reserve. It was actually that money was leaving the country for payment on the Federal Reserve's debt. Okay. It didn't go to any government services. It didn't go to the war effort or anything at all, but nobody knew it. And over the years, they've increased the rate and all of that stuff. But everybody came into this voluntarily. They didn't know they were volunteering, and therein lies how you get out of it. Okay, but they did come into it voluntarily. So that's how the income tax got started. That's why, because it was known back then that if you work, your labor is an exchange for your compensation. There's no income there. If I buy something for a dollar and I sell it for $2, I've made $1 in income. But if I go to work for you for an hour and you pay me $10, that's an exchange. That's a what's called a zero-sum transaction. There is no income. There is no income at all until you fill out a 1040 form and you write on there, I earn $10 in taxable income. It is you, by signing that form, who are declaring it to be taxable, and that is why they can collect, and that is why the income tax is not unconstitutional. The 16th Amendment is irrelevant. It has no enabling clause. Check the 17th, check the 15th. You'll see what an enabling clause is. It's a mandate. There is none in the 16th. There is no authority to enforce the 16th Amendment. It's meaningless. The tax is genuinely voluntary.
Can I ask you something?
But nobody knows how they volunteered, and so they don't know how to opt out. Yes, go ahead. Well,
I want to ask you about opting out, because look, for those of us who have studied this and researched it, it feels really dicey when you see people like Peter Schiff's father, Erwin Schiff, spend his last days in prison because he tried to fight this system. Maybe Erwin Schiff went about it the wrong way, but how do people opt out so they don't end up in prison? Look, for those of us who have studied this and researched it, it feels really dicey when you see people like Peter Schiff's father, Erwin Schiff, spend his last days in prison because he tried to fight this system. Maybe Erwin Schiff went about it the wrong way, but how do people opt out so they don't end up in prison?
I'm going to tell you the answer to that in a moment. First off, just so you know, Erwin, bless his heart, never accepted the significance of the Social Security number, and that is why he failed. Okay, the Social Security number is the joinder for the entire system, all of it. Okay, when you get a social, you have to understand the number, the old Social Security cards actually used to say on them, this number is the property of the United States government. It actually used to say that on there, and that hasn't changed. It doesn't say it anymore, but I mean, the fact has not changed. The number itself is the property of the government. So it is not your number. It has been assigned to you. In other words, federal property has been attached to you. Everywhere you go, you walk around with this federal property attached to you. That's why you are subject to federal jurisdiction, because you're walking around with the government's property. So here's the thing. Assignment, okay, is a legal process. And accepting the Social Security number, okay, is part of entering into a contractual relationship with the government. And in any contractual relationship, when you enter into it, there are four necessary components to that entry into the contract. They are, it must be a knowing, intelligent act, intentional, and voluntary. Now, that means you have to know what you're doing. That's number one. It has to be an intelligent act. You have to have considered and thought about it. Intentional means you have to intend the consequences of entry into the agreement, and voluntary is self-defining. It has to be voluntary. So let me ask you a question. When you first got your Social Security number, or if you got it as a minor when you turned 18, did any government official ever tell you that having the number was voluntary and by accepting it, you were waiving your rights? Yes or no?
No.
That means that the assignment itself is fraudulent. You could not have known what you were doing if indeed you were not informed that it was voluntary. Now, the thing about fraud is there's no statute of limitations on fraud. If something happens 80 years ago and you just discover the fraud today, you can go after the fraud, okay, dating back 80 years. Only when you start to discover the fraud does any kind of statute of limitations come into effect. So here is the key. Okay, you have to, and it's not actually returning. The term would be rescinding. You have to rescind the number itself. And the way you do that is, it's not your number. You can't do anything with it. What you can do is take back your permission, that is your signature on the application for the number. And if your parents signed for you as a minor and you didn't do anything when you turned 18, it becomes your signature. And you take back your permission for them to assign their number to you retroactive to the original assignment of the number. What that means is that you have never had a Social Security number, because anything that is based on fraud is invalid in law. It completely vitiates all contracts and all agreements. So since the number was not properly assigned to you, it was never assigned to you. You have never had a number. And if somebody asks you, you can honestly say, I've never had a number. And you say, due to my sincere religious conviction. You don't have to tell them what your religion is. Those three words are specific, and they invoke religious protections and religious discrimination laws that are on the books. And so by rescinding your permission for them to assign their number, it means you've never had a number. Technically, it means you're entitled to all the money you ever put into Social Security and income tax back in your pocket. Don't get excited. It's not going to happen. Okay. And the corrupt courts and everything, forget it. It's just not going to happen. When I did this, I considered that all that money that I put into Social Security and income tax was the price of my tuition for my education on this. And that way, you know, I was able to acclimate to it. Because a lot of people will say, I'm not going to give up my number. I put all that money into it and everything. I'm not going to give up that number. And the bottom line is, if you really want to reclaim your rights that you have waived, see, that's when you waive them. When you accepted the number, part of that agreement is, in order for you to be controlled by the government, you have to waive your rights. That's why you have no constitutional protections, because you've waived your rights. And the Constitution, you don't have any constitutional rights. You never did. The Constitution is a limitation on government. It doesn't give you your rights. Your rights come from God. All the Constitution does is it prohibits the government from violating those rights. Well, since you have waived your rights, since you've put them on the shelf, the Constitution won't protect you anymore. Duh!
Let me ask you something. I was talking to somebody who's pretty smart, and this person has heard or believes that, for instance, in the case of a 1099, say you're a private contractor, you get paid directly from XYZ company, and at the end of the year, they send you a 1099. So maybe you have 5-6 of those at the end of the year, and that's your income. Those 1099s are shared with the government by the people that paid you, and then you're supposed to file your copies of the 1099, then they tax you on that. This person believes that you can do an amended return and go back and correct those 1099s because it wasn't income. I mean, it's not taxable income, and you could get that money back by doing an amended return. Do you think that's dangerous territory?
Yeah, you're talking about a 1099X. is what you're talking about. And yes, it can be done. Here's the thing. We're talking about two separate things. In the one case, you're talking about the tax. Okay. And by addressing the tax in that way, you are trying to use the existing statute, okay, to exempt you. Exemption, by the way, is a term that means that the exemption is granted by the giver of the privilege. In this case, the giver of the privilege is the federal government. So you are requesting an exemption, and you're doing it by, you know, redefining what your taxable income is. Okay, when you deal with the Social Security number, you become immune to these regulations because they don't apply to you. They only apply to U.S. corporate federal citizens. And when you give up the number, you are no longer one of those. And just like, you know, the IRS regulations don't apply to a citizen of Japan living in Tokyo. They just don't apply. I mean, they don't have universal application. Who do they apply to? They apply to U.S. citizens. If you do what you just suggested, you retain your Social Security number because you can't file these forms without it. You retain your Social Security number. You are still a U.S. citizen. You still have no rights. You may or may not be successful. Let me tell you why. Okay, now XYZ Corporation that you mentioned, okay, files a 1099-S. With the IRS. And in, let's say that, I don't know, let's say they're paying you $1,000 a week, okay? So they file a 1099-S for, you know, whatever, maybe quarterly or something like that. And they say, okay, we have paid Sean $12,000 in taxable earnings, okay? They file that, and the IRS, next to Sean's name, has column A and column B. I'm simplifying it. Okay, they get that 1099-S and they put in column B, $12,000. And now they wait for Sean to file a 1099 that says I earned $12,000. And then they put $12,000 in column A. Column A matches column B. They check it off. They go to the next taxpayer. Now, if Sean doesn't file a return, okay, they come out and they say, well, we got $12,000 in column B, but nothing in column A, then they contact Sean. They say, according to our records, you owe us yada, 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 yada. Now, if you, okay, file a revised return and you say that the actual amount is zero, then it's going to come out in column A. You file a return, zero, okay? So zero does not match $12,000. They're still going to come after you, and they're still going to, you know, try. Now, you may have arguments that you can make, which may or may not be successful, and taking into account that the courts are corporate courts, not legitimate judicial courts, okay, I don't think that you have a very good chance of winning, but you might if you're smart and if you're able to conduct yourself in a court venue. But I think going to court is a last resort. It's really not a great option. Here's the thing. If you don't actually file anything, ultimately, it is XYZ company that holds the liability because they are the ones who declared the $12,000 to be taxable income. They declared it. Now, you understand, when I work for you for an hour, you pay me $10. Like I said, there's no profit there. There is no income there. There is no income tax. And everyone knew that before the advent of what I told you happened after the repeal of the victory tax. Everybody knew that. Okay, today, everybody goes to their attorneys and their certified public accountants, certified by whom? To find out what they owe. They don't take it on themselves to determine that. So they are told and they do what they are told, which we talked about earlier. Okay, but the reality is that your earnings for labor are in exchange. There is no tax there. It only becomes taxable because either you or the company have declared it to be so. And when you do, you become liable for it. When you file a 1040 form that says I earned $12,000 in taxable income, okay, and you sign your name to that, guess what? Now they can collect it because you declared it to be taxable. Well, in this case, the XYZ company is the one that declared it to be taxable. So they're the ones that are liable until and unless you, Sean, file the return for column A. That's how it works.
So in future years, if one were to, well, by the way, most people are employed by an employer and their taxes are taken out of their check before they even get paid. But in the case of people that get 1099s and are paid directly by businesses or companies, in future years, how would you then file your taxes? Do you first rescind your Social Security number? And then, let's say you do that, what do you do with taxes? And how do you handle these 1099s in subsequent years?
In the first case, if you rescind the Social Security number, you're no longer a U.S. citizen. You are a foreign citizen. You are a California citizen, a Michigan citizen, a New York citizen. But you remember, they are countries unto themselves. And prior to the war between the states, that was known. Everybody was a citizen of their state. The 14th Amendment, okay, which itself was fraudulently I'm going to say enacted, but it wasn't really properly enacted, created a new class of citizenship, supposedly for the black people, but that's a bunch of crap. And that's where U.S. citizenship first showed up. Before that, everyone knew they were a citizen of their state. So when you rescind the number, you revert to being a citizen of your state with all of your God-given unalienable rights. So you're a foreign to federal jurisdiction. That means that if you go to work for somebody, what you do when you go to work is you give them what's called a W-8 form. A W-8 form is a certificate of foreign status. It does not require a number. It even says Social Security or taxpayer ID number optional. It even says it on the form. Okay. When your company has that document, they are not required to withhold from you or to 1099 you or anything like that. Now, out of ignorance, they may do it anyway. And if they do it anyway, they become liable because they're the ones declaring it to be taxable income. But if you're on a withholding thing, okay, a W-4 withholding thing, you can only do that if you have a Social Security number. So if you've gotten rid of the Social Security number, the proper thing to do is to give them a W-8 form. Now, the practical problem you run into is that these corporations don't know anything about it. They're doing what their attorneys and accountants tell them and nothing more. They don't know the law, so there are practical considerations. Obviously, the best scenario is if you work for yourself and you can control both sides of the coin. But that's the reality and the legal reality of why and how of the income tax.
All right. Very complicated stuff. There's no magic bullet, but I really do appreciate this conversation.
You asked about property taxes.
No, that's exactly where I was going next. Let me ask you this.
Yeah, but just before I do the property tax, one last thing on this. The issue with the Social Security number, and by the way, in my book, The American Sovereign, in the book itself, is sample documentation as to how to go about rescinding the number. Okay, it tells you exactly how to go about doing it. It is not difficult at all, and there's nothing they can do to stop you from doing it, because all you're doing is taking back what was yours in the first place. But here's the thing.
Well, I was just going to say, word of caution to anybody who wants to go and try to do that, then you're not getting any Social Security payments when you retire, correct?
That's correct. You are giving, this is what I was about to say. What you are doing is you are giving up your eligibility for government programs. Okay. You can still get a driver's license if you want to do that and all that stuff. You can still get a hunter's permit if you want to do something like that. That only compromises your rights with respect to that activity. But Social Security is across the board. It's a waiver of your rights completely. If you want to live free, if it's important to you, then you must give up the number. But what you do when you give up the number is you give up your eligibility for Social Security, welfare, food stamps, unemployment insurance. You want health insurance? You can get it. Go buy it from Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Not a problem. You don't need a Social Security number to do that, believe it or not. Okay? Because I've done that. I know this. Okay? But you can't take these things from the government because the only government that can give you these things is the corporate government. So it's a question of your freedom. How important is your liberty and your rights given by God to you?
Yeah.
Right. Are you willing to do what you have to do to get them back? That's what it's about.
All right. Well, I knew this would be an in-depth conversation, and we've already gone close to an hour, maybe an hour or so here, but I do want to talk about property taxes. So Thomas Jefferson said, the only reason to resort to government at all is to protect our liberties. Now, our liberty includes property. Now, let's just go back to The Crisis by Thomas Paine. Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to bind us in all cases whatsoever. I want to talk about our homes and property taxes. Alloidial title is a real property ownership system where the real property is owned free and clear of any superior landlord. In this case, the owner will have an absolute title over his or her property. Property owned under alloidial title is referred to as alloidial land. Are there any alloidial landowners in the United States? Because the one that comes to mind to me is the Queen. She owns more property than anybody on the planet. And guess what? It's all free and clear. Why in the world are we forced to pay property taxes that put us in a situation of never truly owning our homes or the land upon which they sit free and clear?
Okay, now first, there's two separate issues. Opting out of property tax and alloidial title. Alloidial title, the answer is no. Nobody has allodial title, and I'll tell you why. In order to get allodial title, what you have to do is a few steps you have to take. Step one, you have to do a complete title search back to the original land grants. That can be done, no problem. Make sure there are no clouds on the title. Okay, so you've done that, fine. Then you get a land patent on it. That can also be done. If you're in one of the original 13 colonies, you have to go through the state, otherwise you go through the federal government. You get your land patent, no problem. It is step three that is impossible. Allodial title is supreme ownership. That means there is absolutely no claim on the land whatsoever. Okay, in order to get that, you have to clear the debt that is the public debt on the land. This cannot be accomplished through what's called quiet title procedures. You have to actually find out the debt holder and pay the debt. Now, it is estimated, okay, that the debt on any given piece of property averages around 7 times the annual property tax, but nobody knows for sure because nobody can find out this information. You go to the county recorder on one end, you go to the Department of Interior on the other end, and you do your research, but I don't know, in 30 years, I don't know a single person who has been successful in this, because until and unless you can find out the debt holder, you can't pay the debt. Now, here's how it gets debt on it. Every piece of recorded property at the Registrar of Deeds or the County Recorder, every piece of recorded property is collateralized for government debt. Government borrows money and they collateralize the recorded property over which they exercise jurisdiction. So, that's how public debt attaches. Any property that's ever been recorded has public debt on it. You have to eliminate the public debt. That's the final step before you can claim allodium or allodial title on it. That's why nobody, to my knowledge, has been successful in doing that. But
what a scam.
Opting out of property taxes can be done. I had 5 acres in Central Texas, nice acreage, for many, many years. I bought it in a common law transaction, a private transaction, and I sold it in a private transaction, and I never paid a penny in property tax, and I was never invoiced. I never got a property tax statement. Here's why. The tax itself is not a tax on property. If it was, it would be unconstitutional. The Constitution mentions not once, but twice, there shall be no direct taxations without apportionment. Now, apportionment, okay, works like this. The federal government wants $500 million for the war effort. California, let's say, has 10% of the population. So California gets a bill for $50 million. Let's say California has 25 million people in it. Everybody pays $2. That's apportionment. It does not care whether you're employed, unemployed, old, young, male, female, black, white, executive, or worker, labor, doesn't matter. Everyone pays $2. That's apportionment. That's why the victory tax was not apportionment. It was a 5% tax. So it says that twice in the Constitution. And a direct tax is a tax on life, liberty, or property. If the tax was a tax on your property, it would be unconstitutional. It would have been ruled unconstitutional many, many years ago. It is not. So what is the tax? This is going to get you upset. Okay. The tax is a tax on voluntarily using government services that you were not required to use. What government services? The county recorder, the registrar of deeds, the 5 acres I told you about. See, I knew this, okay? So I never recorded the property. Because I never recorded it, I never got a tax statement. I even, as an exercise, sent a letter to the recorder in that county. And what I said in the letter was, I'm thinking of buying property in the county. I want to know, is there any law requiring me to record the property with you? And they didn't respond. So I sent them a second letter. And they still didn't respond. So I sent them a third letter. And I put, you know, some additional oomph into the third letter. Come on, you know, I've been sending you these letters and all that. And I got back the third letter itself. They sent it back, and the recorder had handwritten on the letter, no, there is no law requiring you to record the property, and signed it. Now, I knew that, of course. Okay, but that's the point. Since there is no requirement, when you record the property, and most people buy their property through lawyers, always record it.
A real estate.
Okay.
Like you're gonna buy a house, you sign 8 million documents. You don't even know what you're signing.
Yep. Exactly. Now you're getting it. Okay. So when you record the property, you are using a government service that is not required, voluntary. The tax is a tax on that activity. The amount of the tax is gauged by the value of the property, but it is not a tax on the property. If you are not recorded, you don't get a tax. And there are ways to unrecord, though it's a little bit complicated. I don't know if you want to go into it now because it is a bit complicated, but I can't explain it to you. There are ways to properly do it. There is some risk, but if you do it properly, okay, the risk is minimal. And like I say, I had five, I made myself the guinea pig on everything I teach. So, you know, before I went out to teach it, I tried it out on myself. When I rescinded my Social Security number, I had a payment plan with the IRS, and I thought, and they said I owed them more money. And that's what drove me to despair. And a friend of mine said, you don't have to pay it. And I thought she was crazy. And so she introduced me to somebody who introduced me to my teacher. And once I learned what I learned, I went into the law libraries for 2.5 years and researched the law. And then I made myself the original guinea pig, rescinded my number. And after a few months of correspondence, the IRS left me alone and they don't bother me. I haven't paid a penny in income tax in 30 years.
So fascinating. You know, there was a real demonization in the past 10 years by the ADL and other groups that would target conversations like these and this whole idea of being a sovereign citizen. Do you remember when that was targeted by the mainstream media? Almost on a weekly basis, I would see them making a big deal about the sovereign citizen movement and targeting essentially conversations like this one, where we're trying to just get down to the bottom of the rabbit hole to understand what kind of system we're even involved in here. But they don't want us to know, and they certainly don't want us waking up others and talking about it.
No, and the ADL says that I'm a hate group, by the way.
Yeah, well, join the club.
Join
the club.
You're right, but it's the two-class system again. The nobility makes the laws and owns the property. The commoners have no say in any of that. We are considered the commoners. We're not supposed to know this stuff.
I think that for those listening, just a word of caution. Anything that you've heard in this conversation that you might consider implementing in your own life really needs to be researched further. Okay, this is not an endorsement of doing anything that's been described in this interview, but it is an endorsement of figuring out who the heck you really are, discovering your corporate personhood, your name in all caps, and doing more research. I think there's valuable information in this conversation that we've just had with Brent Johnson.
And by the way, what you said about the name in all caps is true. I have a case out of Washington State in which the judge actually admitted it. Okay, in the case, it was never a published case, but I have the actual case, and the judge actually admitted it. It's called the nom de guerre, which, by the way, means name of war. Okay, wartime is emergency power type stuff. You know, it all interrelates. The all capital letters, if you properly address that issue in a court venue, they actually will dismiss the case because they are not talking to the natural person. They can only talk to the corporate entity who is identified by the all caps letters. That's absolutely true. Also, I would say to people, I used to say this all the time on my radio show, I would tell you, don't believe a word that I said. Check it all out for yourself. I give people ways to do that, but don't believe. We get in trouble by believing. For example, Sean, when is your birthday?
Well, let's just say it's May 10th. May 10th.
Okay, how do you know?
Probably from my birth certificate.
Okay, so you read it someplace and you believed what you read. Or maybe your mother told you and you believed her. Now, I'm not suggesting it's not your birthday. Your mother was very probably a credible witness to the event. But you cannot know the date of your birth. Now, in the case of your mother, as an example, she's a good, credible witness. So it's reasonable that you believe her. But how many things do you think you know that are actually based on belief? And is the source of the information that you believe as credible as your mother is to the event of your birth?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That relates to everything.
Yes, it does.
Everything. And there's a rabbit hole that I've gone down with a couple of guests that people do not like being talked about. They think it's a psyop. But, you know, let me just say that maybe the biblical version of creation is quite a bit more spot on than NASA might lead us to believe. That's just my view. All right.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about things like that as well. Yeah. I mean, like I told you, you interview me, it can go on and on and on. And I know you have time constraints and everything, but I'd be more than happy to come back another time if you like.
Yeah, I would like that because I think that whole corporate personhood, name in all caps thing, that's its own subject. And we barely scratched the surface on that. So we definitely should have another conversation. Let me ask you. Can people reach out to you? And be careful before you give your email or invite anybody to reach out, because I have an audience that is very engaged and supportive, but I don't want you to be bombarded. But, you know, if I was going to do any of this, I'd want to hire an expert like you to help me go right through the process.
And yes, a lot of people feel that way. And yes, I'm equipped for that. And thank you for the admonition. And I appreciate that. But yes, if people want to get in touch, the best way, okay, is to call. It's a toll-free number, 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733. 888-385-3733. You can also go to my website. Okay, tons of information there. You know, information about my books, information about other things that we do. I do a weekly conference call as well. Information is up there. I have a room in the Telegram community where I'm in pretty much every day. People ask me questions there. Entrance to that community is simple. Go to my website again. It's www.freedomradio.us, freedomradio.us, or call 888-385-3733. And I'll be more than happy to send you information about what we do, answer your questions, or whatever else is on your mind.
Well, thank you so much, Brent. Guys, just to remind you, the talk show is The Voice of Freedom. Brent has authored the books, The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation, and The Quiet Voice of God. And the new one, The Pursuit of Happiness, Freedom in the Human Spirit, are those available on Amazon or where?
They're only available through Freedom Bound International. That's my company, Freedom Bound International. And like I say, go to the website or call the number.
All right. Very good.
There are actually some libraries that have the book in them, but I don't know exactly where they are. I just know that they are out there.
All right. Well, I know Amazon is a force for evil, in my view, and modern-day book burners, but a lot of authors have to put their stuff up there because they're the biggest game in town, I guess. But
well, I've never been in this to make as much money as possible. That's not what it's about. So I don't go to places like Amazon or things like that. I just keep everything as closely held as possible. We're small, but we're very effective.
All right. Well, very good. Guys, our guest has been Brent Johnson. Brent, thanks so much for your time today. And yeah, let's do this again.
My pleasure. I would love to.
All right. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. It really means a lot to me. A special thank you to our patrons who are keeping us in this fight for truth and real news. This is the stuff the Mockingbird mainstream media doesn't want you to know. They don't want you talking about it. Neither does the ADL. And guys, I'll remind you, for real news 24/7, visit us directly at sgtreport.com, the antidote to corporate propaganda. God bless, guys. Bye-bye.
The government is the beast. The Constitution is the whip and chair. The people are supposed to be the lion tamers. They have been remiss in their duty.
May God bless America.